What's up, folks? Welcome to episode 11 of the Adjacent Hex podcast. My name is Zach, and joining me again, ready to toss some angry dice, is Doug. How you doing, man?
I am doing very well. How are you?
Hanging in there. Really excited for this episode, because we also have a special guest this month. We've invited our friend Eric the Completionist to help us out with this topic. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good.
All right. So we've got a big topic today, so let's kick things off with what we've been up to this month. Doug?
Real quick, I just want to say, I think was it last month or the one before, I got to play Fury of Dracula,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't get to play a full game. I got to play a full game finally, just yesterday, actually.
Excellent.
Yeah. I ended up winning relatively quick, but two things happened. One, I was able to just completely randomly guess where Dracula is on the second turn of the game. There's a card that comes up, and you pick locations, and Dracula has to reveal that card, whether it's still in his hand or if it's someplace he's been. And just because the person playing was Dracula for the first time, I guess space is in the middle, mm-hmm. and one of them happened to be where Dracula had been.
Oh.
So completely lucky. The other thing was, remember, we talked about this in the communications episode, where you can share information with people, but mm-hmm. if you're not in the same city, it's open knowledge?
Yes.
Well, since I was the only person, I played all four hunters, so I automatically knew what the whole team had without ever having to reveal it to Dracula.
How horrible is that on the game mechanic as a whole?
I don't know, because I haven't got to play as a hunter with more people,
uh-huh.
But I can tell you this, when I finally was able to track Dracula down for the final battle, I knew all the weapons and things in place without ever having to share them with anyone.
Okay.
So I don't know how much of an advantage it gave me, but it was just something I noticed versus having to strategically place your people in the same cities to share that information secretly.
Mm-hmm.
So unless there's a two-player rule I missed somewhere, I don't know. How about you? What you been up to?
So Eric actually taught me how to play Dead Men Tell No Tales.
Yeah, that was a great game. I was really surprised.
Yeah,
it's really cool.
Another co-op.
Yeah, everybody knows that co-op is my bag, and Eric happens to like co-op games a lot, too.
It's one of my personal favorite games.
I've always wanted to add a pirate game to my collection, but what makes Dead Men Tell No Tales unique is you are a team of pirates ransacking a ghost ship,
mm-hmm.
and which is on fire. So you not only have to race the ghosts, but you also have to race the fire. And now, Eric and I, you and I were able to win.
Yeah.
Sort of by the skin of our teeth. When we turned around and played it with Katie and Jesse and Doug, we got all the treasures revealed, and then the boat blew up.
We were so close. We had three out of four of us off the boat.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth person, treasure in hand, running on their next turn, would have won us the game.
I have spent most of that game waiting for something to blow up and just mm-hmm. to see this ship go nuts. And it only happens toward the end, but it's kind of, I feel like it helps with the theme because there are a lot of other things that slow you down.
What ended up happening was Doug and I were sort of in charge of taking care of the fire.
Yep.
And paying attention to it. And we got a little bit greedy, I think, trying to get the treasure off the boat. We're like, okay, it's all here. We just need to pick it up and get it off the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And we stopped paying attention to the fire just long enough that if a 5 came out of the random events deck, it's game over.
In fairness to us, that literally was the only card that could lose us the game.
Absolutely.
If that had card been anything but the 5,
mm-hmm.
we would have won.
Yep.
Horrible luck. Horrible luck.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely bad luck. But, you know, that's gaming, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it was still great.
Yeah, it was a very fun game. I think Katie and Jesse were a little frustrated by it because we once again got that far and then tanked. But
that's my favorite part of a co-op, though, is
absolutely
its difficulty.
Eric, I was talking a couple of months ago about
Big Book of Madness. Oh
yes,
my
Big
God,
Big Book of Madness.
mm-hmm.
That's been a little bit. Yeah, that game is brutal.
Yeah,
very brutal.
And I mean, so to come that close, it's just like Doug and I talk about it every time we play Gears of War. We always come that close mm-hmm. to winning. And that's one of the many things, I think, that attract me to cooperative games, is that if you lose, everybody feels like, oh, we were so close, if only we had been able to do this.
Well, also, it makes the victory that much sweeter if it's mm-hmm. that close. If you're going to just crush a game, you don't get that adrenaline at the end of it. You don't
yeah.
get that big rush.
I agree.
But, you know, drawing that card, there's one card difference between the win or the loss is everybody's hyper-focused on what's going on at that point.
Right.
And, you know, you take away the ability to lose, you take away the sweetness of the victory, really.
Yep.
But also, co-op games are the only ones where you can cheat to win.
If all players allow it, yes.
Have you ever played Ghost Stories?
I have not.
I haven't either.
We'll I'll bring it next game day, and we'll all play, and you will cheat.
Okay. Note to self, come ready to cheat.
I played Eldritch Horror, and I feel like that game is up there, too, as far as wanting to cheat.
Yeah, yeah. Just those super difficult.
Very. Ugh. But great. It's
yeah.
It's got a lot of theme, which surprised me.
That's the same guys that's Fantasy Flight, right? That's the same.
Yep. Fantasy
what's
Flight.
What's that game? Arkham Horror?
Yep.
Yep.
Eldritch Horror? Yep. Looks cool.
What about you, Eric? What did you play this month?
So I recently got in Thunderbirds, the board game.
Thunderbirds being the awesome secret agent puppet show.
Yeah, yeah. They just had their 50th anniversary, which is like a ridiculously long time for that. But the board game's great. I think it's very well designed, and it's somewhere between Pandemic and like Forbidden Island and Forbidden Desert, if you ask me.
Okay.
It's got a unique enough mechanic that it stands out and it's different. But if you're into Thunderbirds and like the theme, this is a great thing to have if you're into co-ops. And it's not as difficult to learn as Pandemic Legacy or Eldritch Horror. In fact, I feel a little easier to learn than Pandemic myself.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was a good time. Three games, we lost all three of them, but I had fun. I think a little bit of that was enjoying the show, which I've watched very recently, and am shocked about how well that show has held up. As far as like, I think it's ahead of its time. It was ahead of its time back then, but the game was very good. And I think that we just had one person at the table that didn't like it. He's not very into luck-based games because there's a die roll mechanic in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was it. Everybody seemed to be willing to play it again and give it another try.
Oh, I mean, if you got three games in, people didn't flee from the table.
Yeah, well, everything happened very quickly in it. I mean, win or lose, it seems like if it's going to happen, it's going to happen within, I mean, three or four turns we lost.
Oh, wow. What's the playtime?
I'm going to guess 30 to, you know, 45, but I'd be surprised if it was any longer than that. I don't have it in front of me, but it seems fairly quick.
So now, this is actually the second board game that's come out based on Thunderbirds.
Oh yeah, the older ones?
Back in 1966, there was one released by Parker Brothers, of all things.
Was it a Roll and Move?
Oh yeah, it is Roll and Move. So, you know, stereotypical Parker Brothers. But it's also saying best with one players.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm really interested. You know, we were talking at one point off the air about getting some older games and just having a laugh playing them. I'm going to start looking for this at yard sales.
Good luck with that.
Probably make Jimmy Fallon's Do Not playlist.
That's what we should do. We should email him and be like, when you're done with these games,
ship them our way. Yeah. We might want to get on the horn and do that.
So if I read things correctly, Chris Birch from Mofidius like really loves Thunderbirds.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing he probably played the game that you're talking about. And
yep.
I think that's why he wanted Matt Leacock to help create this, because it's International Rescue Thunderbirds is about a team helping the world.
Mm-hmm.
What better way to do that than a co-op, you know? And
yeah.
I think that's where all the older games, they were anything but that.
Co-op didn't really come about until, I would say, fairly recently.
Yeah, I don't remember it being a very common thing.
I think Reiner Knizia gets credit for like really popularizing it, because he did a Lord of the Rings co-op game that came out in the early 2000s.
We actually might be demonstrating that at Board Game Day coming up.
Oh, okay.
Yep. One of our customers came in and said he'd run it, so.
I actually got to play that game back when it came out. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
That was years ago. That was probably 2000. No, it had to be later than that. 2000. Four, five.
Eric, have you played anything else?
So most of what I play commonly, like week to week, is Pathfinder the card game. It's a personal favorite of mine.
Really popular game.
Yeah, yeah. It's surprisingly, getting groups together is not as difficult as most groups for a game that you campaign. It's very easy to put together, and its theme is definitely there if you're into the RPG. But for a fantasy co-op card game, it's got a lot of elements in it that are packed around that co-op that make it fun, like a little bit of deck building, a little bit of like role playing and story on the cards. And every time you play, you have the same, you know, basic idea to play it as a co-op, but always twists on the rules, exceptions based on what you're doing. And you build and level up your character as you go. So wanting to play it again is, the mechanics help you want to do that.
So a lot of replayability.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Probably the most I've seen.
Isn't that the one where people like sleeve it because you have to write on the cards?
Yeah, so there are character cards, and they have boxes that you check on it, and most people just sleeve it and use dry erase on it.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, there is even organized play for it where they sell on Paizo's website, like PDFs for this organized play. And the game is much more difficult as organized play, but they sell character packs that you can just buy without owning the game and show up to a local event and play and use cards out of that. You don't need to take the cards home of the person that owns the game. Mm-hmm. So you've got your own little thing going, and then you can just pop into another venue and go from there. It's fun.
Is there something that incentivizes the player to go to an organized play event?
So getting your character log so that you can, you know, level up and just, you know, continue to play that character is a big one. But they do have, like, you know, promo cards that they give out, mostly for ordering the game through their site, or they'll have them at stores as the chapters come out. They sell them split up, like you buy the base game, you get chapter one, and then 2 through 6 are sold separately, like the following months or every 2 months. And those promo cards are pretty nice. They're usually based on goblins, which in Pathfinder the goblins are very unique and people like them.
Okay. So how does that impact the game experience for someone just getting into the game?
So I feel that someone just getting into the game would have a lot of fun with it. But I feel sometimes that the promos where they are pretty cool, like a goblin card. I mean, especially like if you're a fan of Pathfinder and like goblins, I feel like you'd be excluded a little bit knowing that it's difficult to get a hold of these. But there are ways of going about it if you're on top of it. Like if you know what local stores tend to carry it, or if you go through their site and order a subscription, you're guaranteed all the cards through that series.
Well, what about somebody who's just kind of getting into it? I actually have an example. My brother-in-law, he's a gamer, but he's just kind of getting into it. He's got a few games, and he heard about Pathfinder. I don't know how he heard about it, but he heard some buzz, and he went and just picked up a base game. So I'm assuming he doesn't have any of the special promos or stuff.
No, he wouldn't unless the store had them and handed it to him. Yeah.
But how much homework would he do, like, for the layperson who's not gonna know the stores to go to, not know the events, just the guy who picks it off the shelf? Like, is missing out on those promo cards, is that a huge deal? Is it
for this particular game, because there's like thousands of cards in a game, it will go pretty unnoticed. They are unique. They do make the game more difficult when they show up, so they're for seasoned players, but they are nice to find in there. Like, okay, when you see it, you know what it is, and it's kind of, they're funny. You know, they have things written on them that are a little bit more entertaining than the base game, because again, goblins. Okay. But yes, like a new person going into it will not know about them generally unless the store points it out, or they do their research.
Which they're probably unlikely to do if they're just...
if they're just getting introduced, yeah.
And there's generally, I think, one per set. So like base box, you'll get one. Okay. And then all the way through 6.
So the reason we ask this is our main topic is a little bit soapboxy today. That's the reason we brought Eric on. Eric and Doug and I have all, at one point or another, Eric more than anybody else, been burned by the distribution of promos. I introduced Eric as Eric the Completionist because he does like to, as we've established on this show, have all of it, whatever it might be. And the biggest offender to this practice is, right now, Geek and Sundry and their tabletop day that's coming right up here.
Calling them right out, huh?
I am. I'm not letting them off the hook on this one.
It's a pretty hot topic.
And part of that is, you know, Tabletop Day is right around the corner. It's coming up within this month.
When is Tabletop Day?
I believe it's the weekend right after PAX, April 30th.
Okay. PAX East.
Yeah, PAX East. And the first year that they did it, it was a great idea. I was 100% on board. There was nothing to chase about it. It was just find a store and play a bunch of games. And I'll be honest, it was responsible for getting me into the board game hobby. and I know it was responsible for a lot of other people as well. The problem is, by the second year, which I believe was last year, either that or the third year, they had promo cards attached to it, or promo materials attached to it. So my reaction was, oh, well, I play a bunch of these games. It would be really nice to have these promos, because I don't want to break my game experience. And I'm sure Eric will talk about that in a moment.
Oh, yeah.
But the problem was they weren't available. I went to 5 different stores in New Hampshire and Massachusetts. I drove all the way down to Massachusetts in a car that probably shouldn't have driven out of town, trying to find these promo cards. And no store had them. By the time I got to anywhere, they were completely out. Or just hadn't ordered them altogether. Because a $200 price point for something that you're ultimately giving away and not making your money back on, nobody's going to do that.
Well, the only one I got was the Dead of Winter. No, I think you got me a Dixit.
I did. I got the Dixit one for you.
So I got Dead of Winter and Dixit. But the only reason I have those is because the one day they were available, I was unavailable and had something else to do. And I only got them because you drove around all over the place and scooped up an extra one for me.
And you know where I ended up going?
I do not.
Books a Million.
The last place you'd expect.
Yep. Yeah. I popped in. I was looking for a book for a class I was taking. And I saw some people with a big cardboard box that said Geek and Sundry on it. I'm like, oh, I wonder what that could be. And fortunately, I got lucky enough to get all the promos that I was looking for. But the problem was I didn't play a single game all day. And I was super bummed. Like when they announced that there was a Dead of Winter promo, I'm like, oh, great. I'm going to play one of my favorite games.
Mm-hmm.
And no such luck. As a matter of fact, the guy who was running the event at Books a Million didn't even know what Dead of Winter was.
Wow.
And I was like, that's absurd. Yeah. And this year they're doing it again. We talked a couple months ago about one of my new favorite games, Don't Turn Your Back. There is an exclusive law card that changes, you know, a way you play the game coming out for Tabletop Day. So what am I going to do again? Drive all over the state? Drive into Massachusetts? Drive down to Connecticut? It's really frustrating. Now, Eric and I did talk to a friend of ours who runs a game store who is looking into obtaining these promos for us, and that's a really, really nice thing for him to do. But even that, like having to convince a friend of ours to go out of his way to find these promos, that's appalling to me.
Yeah, Board Game Day isn't so much Board Game Day, it's go look for promos and maybe get excited about your fine day.
I don't mind that so much, the promo stuff, except for some of these promos can be really game changing.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely, box A, standard base game, versus box B, which is a 1 or 2 or 3 or whatever card difference, can be drastically different games. I know there's a game coming to mind, Epic.
Mm-hmm.
Eric backed and has, and I've got to play before, but Eric, you'd probably be better explaining the situation for the Kickstarter promos.
So Epic, they had a set of promos, 5 cards for each of the 4 colors or factions, and they were all, you know, unique cards that you wouldn't see in the base box, and no one retail will receive them. So at first, my mindset, if I didn't know the company and their policy any better, my first mindset would be, you know, oh great, here we go, like chasing the board game dragon.
Mm-hmm.
It was only until I emailed White Wizard Games and said, hey, what's stopping said guy who buys 3 boxes and putting 3 of these, you know, ridiculous promos when there's a convention and a tournament from playing all of them? Because the point of the game wasn't to be a game like Magic where it's like who had the better luck has the cards. It was meant to be a you get everything when you buy it. And they said that after a year, those cards will come out, maybe with different art, and only until it's available to the public will they be allowed in tournaments, which made me a lot more relieved and relaxed, having bought just 1 pack and got 1 set of the promos, where you can have, when you build a deck, up to 3 of each promo in a deck potentially. So I felt a little bit better about just buying 1 box to start, knowing that later on I will be able to receive these, which helps.
Well, that's interesting too, because in that case it could change your game, but also not on, I guess, a competitive level.
Right.
Yeah, it keeps everybody on a level playing field with, you know, the tournaments just saying that these are the cards that are allowed. But when you let promos in there that have their own rules, you're getting a piece of the pie and not the whole pie.
Give somebody an unfair advantage.
Yeah.
Just that exclusivity. You might miss out on a Kickstarter. You might not be somebody who backs things on Kickstarter. To never then be able to get those cards is really, without paying exorbitant prices. I mean, usually you can find some of this stuff, but...
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at eBay right now for some of the promos that are now unavailable for certain games. Some of the, even just promos that don't really change the game a whole lot, they're going for $50, $60 for a card.
For one playing card, yeah.
I'm looking at some of the promo sets from Sentinels of the Multiverse, which is the game I probably know the best. The Prime Wardens, which came out in 2015, are now up to $50.
Wow.
So you know what's interesting about that? There's two possibilities there. Either the person selling it has no idea that Greater Than Games intended on re-releasing them all with different art, which is awesome of them to do.
Absolutely.
Or they think they're going to find a buyer out there who does not know that either.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And get the money for it, which is very sad.
And I think the indicator here, Eric, is the fact that the eBay listing is tagged OOP, or out of print.
The art is.
Yeah. And that's the only thing that is. They have made it abundantly clear that the alternate art hero pack will be available to everybody for now until Oblivion.
Even the people that missed the recent Kickstarter.
Hold on. From now until Oblivion being the end of time or the new expansion? Oblivion, for people who aren't aware, is the name of the next and final expansion for Sentinels of the Multiverse.
Well, that's not entirely true, Doug. It's Oblivion. Okay. Anyway, the problem that I have, really, with these Kickstarter-exclusive promos or the Tabletop Day Geek & Sundry promos is the developers are forced into these exclusive contracts that say you cannot make this card available. I contacted Evil Hat Productions, the company responsible for Don't Turn Your Back, just to ask them, hey, you know, there's no Tabletop Day around where I live. What can you do for me? And they're like, well, not really anything, because we're signed into this contract. And I'm like,
so they're locked in.
That's, why do you do that?
It's that kind of homework we're talking about. Like, how are you supposed to know that Sentinels card is out of print, but it's only the art, and you'll be able to get them later?
Right.
You know, if you're just a casual person who doesn't want to spend hours researching, calling companies, this kind of thing, how are you supposed to know that?
Now, Eric, you are that type of person that will spend hours on the phone.
There's no dispute about that. But, Zach, you back this game, okay, on Kickstarter. You know about it because this is your game, man. You're passionate about Don't Turn Your Back. You know, in our gaming group. And just you contacting them alone should have told that company, this guy really supports us because you knew about the card. It's great that they were honest with you and told you that their hands were tied. But at the same time, if it wasn't for you, there would be no Geek & Sundry card coming out. I think that's where they fail is if they do make an exclusive contract, and yes, this doesn't help everyone, but they should make an agreement to get a set of those out to the backers as a late thank you.
What Eric's talking about here is Don't Turn Your Back barely scraped through funding. It is almost the bare bones of what was required to fund the game, and the backers really had to campaign hard for it via social media and word of mouth and whatnot, to get that game to be a reality. And what Eric's saying here is, if they wanted to really reward the people who made this game a possibility, they should not be signing into this kind of an agreement.
I know another company that did, and again, I'm grateful that they were upfront with me, but they listened, and the response I got seemed genuine in the fact that I don't think they're planning on doing it again. Valeria Card Kingdoms, which is very similar to Machikoro, which to my understanding has been very successful, had a Duke card that was kind of a parody of Aliens guy, and it did have its own unique mechanic. And my inquiry, having been in on the Kickstart, was, are we getting that too? Because there was a box opening video in which it was in there. And when I was told no, I was shocked. And I inquired about it, and they explained to me that, you know, they had made a deal with this particular group, and that they would get it, and that I could get it if I waited and went to their Kickstart. But after doing my research as to who they were, they seemed so small that I wasn't even sure if I was going to know when it happened, let alone get it. So that was a big disappointment. Mm-hmm. And I went on to explain to them the points about possibly remaking this card with, you know, just different art to get to the backers or to even people who buy it retail or even put it in one of their expansion packs. And that would be satisfying because, again, there's a piece of that pie that's missing that I'll never see. They took very well to it. They listened. They actually appreciated it. And I think they were very new to it, and they're business people. But at the same time, mm-hmm. you can't forget your founders.
It is a two-way street.
When you mm-hmm. forget them, that's when things don't go well later on. You know, Villages of Valeria came out on Kickstarter later on, and I backed it because of their willingness to hear me out. And there was no sign of any kind of exclusive thing like that, and they'll have my back for a long time. You know, if there is any exclusive, like, just make sure that mechanic makes its way to my game eventually, and I'll be happy. I don't care what art's on it.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting that you bring that up, because we're talking about something changing the game, but I've noticed Pathfinder, all these games we're talking about, Sentinels in the Multiverse, a lot of them, the only difference between the exclusive card and the base game is just a different art print. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think that's like a good idea, bad idea?
I think it's a great idea. I think making sure that the whole pie is getting to the average customer and the Kickstarter backer, as far as mechanics go, is the best possible thing you can do. I still feel very special if I have a card that has alternative art, because I can still show it off and people go, ooh, that's neat. But they won't go, ooh, that's neat.
Right, why don't I have it? My game's not as good.
The alternative art idea is probably the best case scenario for anybody who wants to do promos, because that, to me, shows care for the average gamer and the hardcore gamer.
Mm-hmm. Right, so the hardcore guy gets a little extra, but the other guy's not getting screwed because they're not doing that research.
And these mechanics, oftentimes, it's hard to find examples of it, but in the time that I've been gaming, I've seen some that I've said, huh, this seems like an afterthought, like they just made this up after the game was made and it mm-hmm. doesn't really fit. Mm-hmm. And then I've seen ones that have been like, they had this plan, but they took that piece out and added it in as a promo.
Are you talking about like Kickstarter, where it's like, it yeah. looks like it was part of the game and they took it out and made it a, what are those called, stretch goals?
Yep.
That type of thing. Like, it looks like it really should be in the base yeah. game, but they're kind of...
It's interesting that that happens, but I don't think at any point, I mean, if you're making a rule later, that's an expansion, not a promo. You know, I mean, I suppose if your only mm-hmm. idea is one card, sure. But yeah, get that out to everybody. I mean, it's, if you're going to make it, anybody ordering from your web shop, going to a convention, your local game store calls up and says, hey, I've got a few people buying your game here. Can you send me anything mm-hmm. to give to the customer? People mm-hmm. would be so much happier.
And there's quite a few companies who do that. I remember last year, right around Tabletop Day, Greater Than Games got word with the rest of us that Geek & Sundry is commissioning all these impossible-to-find promos that are only available on this day. And they were like, well, no, we're not having any of it. And they shipped us off a pile of the most recent promos for all three of their major games.
No exaggeration either.
I literally cannot give them away enough. I still got some left a full year later.
Everybody, whether they've been into those games or not, has left your presence, that store, and thinking about Greater Than Games, very happy that they have it.
There's no strings attached. They just get them. Even if they don't have the game, they appreciate it.
Well, you know, Eric actually said something. It that's not a promo. That's an expansion.
Mm-hmm.
And it got me thinking, I backed the game on Kickstarter that I've mentioned before called Strife,
yep.
Legacy of the Eternal. And the Kickstarter, I'm going to say exclusive, but really it's not, but the special Kickstarter thing
yep.
was you got the expansion for free.
Yeah.
So I kind of like that idea. I mean, that's sort of that releasing the promos later type thing. But this, they straight up said, this is going to be a full expansion. You were going to be able to buy it on its own shortly after the game is released, or back us now.
Yeah, and that's good communication. I will wait. If I miss a Kickstart, but they'll be available later, I will totally wait and be very happy with that company still. They'll continue to get my business. I might even make that next Kickstart that they have.
Right. Well, I just backed Indie Board and Cards. They had a game that just ended, Grifters. Indie Board and Cards being the people who did Resistance, Coup. And I backed the game because, well, I was kind of already interested, and this kind of just put me over the edge. But I'm getting 6 characters and upgraded player boards, which aren't huge, but, and they will never be released to retail.
That burns me.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what I'm talking about. Like, this is a game that I wanted to get. Now I know if I wait for it down the road, I'm not going to have a full game.
When you bring that to the table, right, you might not add those in right away, right? And people will play it and love it. And they'll be like, oh, where can I get this game, right? The second those are in there and you're having fun with something that you got for backing and you're excited about, you put them in there and people play. And they go to get the game. And let's say you don't bother telling them. They just go get the game. They're excited. They're disappointed because something they might have liked is not there. So as a good person, you would be like, yeah, these are exclusives. You won't see these, but you can still get this. What do you think the customer or the potential customer does at that point? Or gamer even. Like, I might not go get it. I might just play Doug's at that point. They think it helps sales to make these things right away. And in short term, it does. But in long term, they're going to be forgotten about. Because if anybody wants that whole thing and have the experience they had with the stuff that you had in your game, they're not going to see it.
And I gotta commend the effort of Plaid Hat Games last year with the Geek and Sundry promos that they had commissioned for Dead of Winter. I was able to get the Felicia Day promo. I don't remember how. I think it was through the Board Game Geek web store a considerable amount later. I don't know if that involved them breaking their contract or not, but I did notice that it was available. And I gotta say, well done, guys, because you clearly listened to what the fans want and what is going to help improve your sales down the road. Eric, you're absolutely right about that. It's not just one day only promos. A couple years ago, when we were first getting into the Firefly board game, Game Trade Magazine released a promotional ship that was so wildly popular. If you weren't there when that was available, most of the time you didn't even know that that was a possibility. People were so upset about it. I recall this on their forums that they said, okay, we goofed. We are going to re-release the Artful Dodger promo with some cards that are exclusive to that kit, but it will be available from now until forever. It's companies like that. That's integrity.
Just to play devil's advocate, I'm thinking on the other side. Suppose I got Artful Dodger, now I gotta go out and buy something I already have because there's three more cards in that box.
That was the big question mark to me.
Well, are we ever happy? I'm complaining about indie board and cards and grifters, but at the same time, it got me to back.
Yes, it did.
It did, but when you play that game, you've got how many people at the table? Like 4, 5, 6 players, depending on the amount of players of the game. All those players, if they like the game, are potential buyers. Not if they know they're not going to have the experience they had with your game.
I talked about playing Blood Rage. We've talked about this before, too. When I played Blood Rage, I played our friend Corey and Jess's game. And they kickstarted it, and they had all the expansions. And my buddy John was also playing. And literally, the reason he's buying the game is because he found out he can get that extra stuff, which is a ton of extra stuff. At Gen Con, and he's going to Gen Con. But if he wasn't able to buy that stuff, he would just pass on that game altogether.
Having to be in the right place at the right time, that's really what all this boils down to.
Yeah, we said, do your homework. That's the lesson of the day.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know,
it's not enough.
Well, the Penguin from King of Tokyo is an example. You win that for winning a tournament. It has no mechanic in the game whatsoever. It is just an alternative monster you can play in King of Tokyo.
So not changing the game.
It's just an extra avatar that you can look like in the game. And it's cool to have.
How about this? Do you think it makes a difference that that's more of a trophy because you have to win a tournament?
Because anybody that comes to the table with that, you know you got to play harder.
You have to take them out first.
That is a good example of a pro. You know, you don't need it to play the whole game. And it is like a trophy that you get to put on the table when you game. You want that challenge. Everybody's going to up their game when you have it if they know about it.
It's essentially the alternate art.
It is the alternative art. Yeah, and the fact that it's only available during a tournament makes it a very good trophy.
I have a question. I don't know much about it, but when they came out with the like power-ups and where they have like character-exclusive powers, did the Penguin get any?
So I had to do my research on that, and their word was any character that comes out as a promotion is not going to have their own set of power-ups at all. Which, again, like, awesome. Okay. You know, like, I'd hate to buy an expansion where it's like, okay, these are the Penguin power-ups, but I'm never going to see that Penguin because I'm not that great at the game. You know, on the other hand, that company, kudos to them for this idea, they do have exclusive cards that for a long time were very hard to find. Like, you'd only find them at conventions, and even then, sometimes there wouldn't be any at it. You'd see them more in Europe than in America. But they'd be up there on Board Game Geek, people would be getting them over time. And of course, they'd be sold on eBay for a ridiculous amount of money because you had to win them. But they did have their own mechanics, and people wanted them. And they were actually nice enough because I never saw anything in the area, so I had a talk with someone from Elo Games, and I said, look, like, I really like this game. In my area, people love playing this game, but nobody has a way to get any of this stuff. Nobody has a way to enjoy it. And they were willing enough to help me out. They sent extra cards. I've had multiple games in the area where we've just had people jump into the game because King of Tokyo's like that. And I've sent people off with awesome cards, like handsful, because they were very generous about it. But until I made that call and showed that interest, I don't think anybody would have known about them if they're not as, you know, hardcore of a gamer as I am, or done anything about it.
So maybe ignorance is bliss.
It makes it easier.
So here's what I'd like to do to sort of put a ribbon on this. What are the takeaways? What would be the takeaway for a consumer, a gamer?
Oh, that's really tough. I think it matters what kind of a gamer are you. Like, Eric likes to complete things. I don't necessarily need to have a lot of the expansions and stuff. This, my opinion is that it's kind of up to you.
Okay.
It's a very personal thing. Do you care? Like, Dixit, my game has one card you don't have. Do you care?
I agree with you, Doug. It just depends on the person.
And, okay, what would be the takeaway for a game company?
I think for a company, I would tell them, remember your backers, the reason why you're making money, which is your customers and your fans. And take care of them, because if people do care about this stuff and they do have to dump a ton of money to get it because of people selling them online that much, or they'll never see it and it's just difficult, you're gonna lose them. You're gonna lose them fast.
Yeah, and I would say two things. One, know your audience.
Yep.
You know, a more competitive game where that one promo card can make or break you. It can be all the difference.
Yep.
That's kind of a nasty thing to keep away from people. Sort of stemming off that is that I prefer promos that aren't going to make or break a game.
Yeah, I would add that if you're going to do promos, consider alternate art, because it makes people feel good and it's still something cool.
Can I just sort of add on to that? I actually backed a game on Kickstarter called Agility.
Yep.
And I think this is a great example. It's both personalized and non-game changing.
Yep.
I backed the game Agility. It's about dogs running. The first player marker is going to have my dog's name on it, and like the little score markers are going to have my dog's name on it. And if you buy retail versions, it's going to be like a water bowl and a bone, but mine are specially like hand carved things, just as sort of a thank you to the backers, but doesn't change the game at all.
That is awesome. I mean, I love showing off my PAX exclusive Star Realms card. That I mean, I don't need it, but it's just cool to have in there and replace it with another ship like it. Because when it comes out, people are like, what's that? And I'm like, well, it's the same as this, but check it out. It's from PAX, you know?
Just says PAX on it. Yep.
I've got that card because you actually made me get it before I...
Yeah, man, don't lose out. Boss Monster. This is going to be much quicker than you guys have ever known it. I got that game, the Kickstart version of it. It had a lot of exclusive cards in it. These cards,
yes, it did.
When I inquired about them, were never going to be made again. Period. Half the bosses in Boss Monster were never going to be made again and had unique abilities.
You can't see me right now, but I'm like, what is, why?
As I understand it, it's a promise they made to their backers, and it was their first time. I think it was their first game. So they made a mistake, and I think once they got the feedback from it, they changed it. My story is, I would bring this game out, and I was very excited about it. I had this game, and people would play it. I had all the stuff in it. And again, this is just touching a bit on what we talked about earlier, but everybody played this game and they'd be like, oh man, this is really fun, I liked it, which is great, I'd bring it out. They'd ask where they could get it and I would tell them, you guys can get it right now, but I'd put a deck out and I'd say, see these bosses? And then I'd put another deck out and be like, see these other half of bosses? You're only going to get half this game of bosses. Mm. And I don't think another person ever bought it, and then I feel like people were resistant to play it after. I can't be sure why the resistance later. They had a lot of fun, but I think that really killed their interest for this game.
Absolutely.
And that was a big one for me, because I got into that game not realizing what was going on with it and found out after, and so did all the players that played it and enjoyed it. So it just kind of got lost, and nobody really talks about or mentions Boss Monster anymore. And, you know, honestly, if this was my game and my company, I'd want to change that. That's sad. But that's my Boss Monster story.
You know, the whole reason we started this podcast podcast was because we have some pretty strong opinions, I think, about board game culture and how companies can work with the players to really, you know, maximize the fun we have with the experience of board gaming. And if we don't get a chance to voice these opinions or use the podcast to voice these opinions, they kind of never get heard. Hopefully this will reach the ears of the people who are in charge of promo distribution and whatnot, and maybe we can exact some change. From the player level, just know, you know, what you're looking for in the game. From the manufacturer, the creator level, know your audience. And for God's sakes, people like Geek & Sundry, don't make them sign exclusive contracts. Make the cards available.
Yeah, and thank you to all the companies out there that do the right thing. Even the ones that backpedal. Like, kudos to all of them out there, and the ones that know it too.
Sometimes you just have to go back on your word, and it's going to make a lot more people happy than it is going to honk people off. For now, if you want to check out older episodes of this podcast or some of our other work, head on over to facebook.com/anotherletdown. I promise the main site will be up soon. As soon as school break hits, I'll fix it. Huge thanks to our editor, Jody Wagner.
Thank you, Jody.
She's still struggling with some computer issues, but she still consistently reviews everything that I edit and gives me feedback. So the podcast just could not go on without her. Thank you, thank you, thank you. If you have some more feedback for us, you can reach us on Twitter. My name is at DENONCZD, and Doug is at ITSOKTOLAFF. If you have something a bit longer to say to us, feel free to send us an email at adjacenthex@anotherletdown.com. Coming up very soon, we'll be hanging out at PAX East in Boston, Massachusetts, and Granite Game Summit in Nashua, New Hampshire. PAX is one of our favorite conventions from April 22nd to 24th, and we try to go every year. They have everything from tournaments to meet and greets with designers and developers. G2S is a newer event on May 14th with a focus on open gaming, and is considerably smaller, but has already attracted quite a lot of attention, so we're looking forward to that. We've also been broadcasting some games live on Twitch, so if you'd like to join us, we've been broadcasting every other week or so at twitch.tv/anotherletdown. And a big thanks to Eric for helping us out this month.
Thank you, guys. You do an awesome podcast, and thank you, Jody.
From all of us here at Adjacent Hex and Eric the Completionist, happy gaming, and we will talk to you next month.
PAX should have paid us for that.